Welcome to Go Global Fast, where globalization and cultural awareness meet heart and soul. Come along and gain practical insights about how to deal with many cultures at once with sensitivity and grace. And here are the hosts of Go Global Fast, Dr. Tyra Kobayeva and Deborah Brown.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. And we are here for another episode, if you will, of Go Global Fast. And it is an amazing time to be thinking about globalization and cultural awareness. I am just amazed at everything that's in the news, everything that's going on around the world. Things are changing absolutely split second by split second. And we're trying to figure out where are we in all of that. And I would like to welcome my co-host to the show, of course, my good friend, Dr. Tyra Kobayeva. Are you there?
I am.
You haven't gone off to faraway lands and forgotten to be with us today, of course. I mean, there's just so much going on. Wouldn't you agree this is just an amazing time to be alive?
Yes, and let me tell you also why I think that. Well, number one, you said, you have not wandered into far-off lands or something of that extent.
Right.
Well, actually, I have. But you will never know it. Like, you know, this show will go if I'm in Italy or I'm in France or I'm in Greece or I'm in Turkey or I'm in Ukraine or I'm in Russia or I'm in the Far East. You know, nobody would know. It's just the sign of times. That's number one. And number two, what I wanted to say, at the very beginning of the show, the voice says that this show is about how to deal with cultures with sensitivity. And my point is that not only we need to deal with other cultures, listen, we should understand what our culture is and see it clearly without distortion and not be attached to certain aspects of that culture. And if they need to change, they need to change. So, yes, it is an exciting time to live, at least for me, and it's certainly not the time when you can afford not to think.
I agree with that absolutely without question. This is a time to think. Now, you were talking about all the different places that you could be, and I could as well, and still be able to do this show. You talked about Italy and Turkey and anywhere else in the world. Now, let's talk about, as we promised last time, networking globally. You know, does it look different if you are abroad? You know, does an American networking style have to change in order to accommodate different cultures? You know, what is your take on networking in terms of business and etiquette maybe? I don't know. There may be lots and lots of layers to it that I don't even know how to ask the question. So what do you think?
Okay, well, let's look into that a little bit. And thank you very much for asking such an interesting question. First of all, let me remind you that last time we were discussing at length the subject of personal relationships, humanitarian issues, humanities inclinations, social activist inclinations in people, and how American, specifically American culture, expresses it. And I was giving you examples as to what's happening in other areas, how differently we might approach it. So the question is the following. Suppose you belong to a certain culture, and then you go, suppose you're an American. Let's say, for now, let's take Americans. And suppose you start dealing with another culture. What do you do? Do you change the protocol? My suggestion is the following, and that goes, it flies in the face of many, many recommendations that say, yes, look at the protocol and adhere to it. I say the opposite thing. I say there are always so many things in the protocol, you will never be able to catch them. And very often, I saw businessmen or people who need to function in another culture hit the ground running. They don't have the time. So what do you do? How do you adjust yourself? And I would say, first, you need to start with your own life. And I can tell you, America allowed a very large bubble around every individual. And this is a wonderful thing on the one hand. On the other hand, it dulls your sensitivity as to how other people are, what they think, how they feel, because the bubble is large. Americans have the largest bubble in the world. This is the largest personal space this culture has. And therefore, it needs to be, how can I say it? It needs to be complemented or counteracted by astuteness and observation and understanding how important other people are without them telling you anything about it. And Americans usually pay attention, in my view, at least in my observation, to, how would I say, tangible things. Let me give you an example, and you will interrupt me when the time comes for me to go on another subject, because please understand, I'm very excited that I got, a soapbox, and I will grab onto it, and so help me here when my time comes. Yesterday late at night, I was talking to my financial advisor, and I was about to fire him. And he was asking me, why? I'm a Harvard graduate. Look at my credentials. Look at my model, investment model. Look at the factual material. Look at how much money I have made for you last year. And I couldn't explain to him that I do not want to deal with him because I think he emotionally puts me down every time he speaks and rubs it in my face that he's a Harvard graduate and I'm a layperson and therefore not exalted enough to understand his financial terminology. And I was trying to tell him that it is more important to me than him making money, and he did not understand. And I was trying to tell him, do you understand that your emotional style is not the way that makes me feel supported? He did not understand. And I understood that there is a wall. And I believe not only a human wall, although some people are more sensitive than others, but also there is a cultural wall. He's thinking in factual terms. He's thinking in terms of efficiency. I am thinking in terms of a human relationship. And I represent all of the emerging markets that way. Even if you make them millions, they will not tolerate you if they humanly do not accept you or emotionally the style is alien to them. Then what to do? And I think that the first thing that needs to be done is that you actually look into your life, how you live, how you feel in your own culture. Multiply it then by 50 times, and you will get the question of networking. So that's number one, and I hope it makes sense. And let me ask you, does it?
It did until the last sentence, and I'm not sure what you meant by marketize. So I think I heard you say that. So I think what I'm hearing you say is that you would say to me, look into your own life and then do what with that?
I can hear you.
In other words, I think that's where I'm lost. Let's say I'm now on my way to Brazil and I know that I'm going to be in a space with a lot of businessmen and women that are exactly in my target market. I would love to be able to capture some business leads and build relationships. Now, is that reasonable in that setting, or is there something else I need to know? And how does looking into my life and preparing from there get me what I want?
Okay.
That's very specific.
Okay. Well, let's examine what you just said. You say,
okay,
how do I get what I want? The whole way, the way this phrase has been structured immediately alienates a person from an emerging market because he or she immediately thinks, oh, so you want something out of me. And I thought you like me. And you as an American would say, but why should I like or not like you? Let's get the job done. And the other side says, I don't want to get the job done. I want to see whether you like me. An American would say, why should I like you? Why should I not like you? And the other person would say, well, sometimes they won't even say it, but they will feel it. I saw these silent conversations going on with a bewildered American and the other person reacting emotionally very strongly and an American being bewildered and not understanding what's going on. So what I'm saying is genuine, personal, and I would like to underscore the word personal interest in another person, personal interest in their affairs, genuine interest, genuine focus, because you cannot fake it. People are very, very sensitive. People really read between the lines, will get you where you want to be. So it's just that, as simple as that. No agenda, genuine interest in people. No agenda, I repeat it, genuine interest in people. And it will go like grease lightning.
Because all right, so.
Yes, yes, you go ahead.
When I go to a networking event in the Phoenix market, as an example, I will find myself sometimes talking to a few people that I know. And then if I'm not in a marketing or a networking mood, let's say, I will stay with the people I know and really end up net sitting or net eating instead of net working. But at some point, you know, in a given two-hour period of time, I think, you know, I really should do what I came here to do, which is meet some other people and see what unfolds. So what I will do, and I've taught other people to do this, I will walk up to someone, I will put my hand out, or, you know, shaking hands, and I will say, I have decided to meet one more interesting person, and I chose you. And then the conversation goes from there. And it really works very well because there's no agenda other than I'm looking for an interesting person. And I will then, you know, talk to them not about what I do and probably not even what they do. And we do get into some interesting conversation, and you never know where it's going to start or go. So does that make sense? Now, could I do that in Brazil or in Turkey?
Let me tell you, multiplied by 100. First of all, what you said is bingo, absolute bingo. So you see, human nature is human nature everywhere. There is a universal component of human nature, and so no matter how utilitarian or personal this society is, still, the human element is always present. So in international relations, in international globalized networking, rule number one, capitalize. Capitalize. I would like to underscore that one more time. Capitalize on the human element. Exactly what you said. And let me walk you one more time by what you said. You said that you will choose a person and you will approach that person and you would say, I chose to meet another person, and you are very interesting to me. Well, that is a door opener. Never lie. Always say the truth. But if it's true, that's it. All the doors open. All the doors open. I've seen it many, many times. I've done it myself many times. And it needs to be done with grace, of course. But then the conversation unfolds, and people feel that nobody is pressing anybody, and that leads the conversation further. It builds a basis for future relationship. And relationship is not, how would I say, to use each other. The relationship is to honor each other and serve each other. And these motives work everywhere, and they translate into any culture. That's what I would like to say. And, of course, you need to be very appropriate doing so. But, again, if you're sensitive to people, you will be able to figure out how to go about it. And your mistakes will be forgiven.
I think that's absolutely right, to keep that human element in it. And a lot of times now that I'm thinking about how I do this, because I haven't been networking lately for some reason, but the other thing I will say is, you know, I've been sitting over in a corner kind of by myself, and I just realized I had better, you know, break out of my my mood here and go and meet some interesting people. You know, then that tells that other person, if they've ever felt the same way, that I am a reasonable person who can shift, you know, who can be in a mood and realize I have to do something about it. And I think that's kind of a powerful thing to admit, and then work with the other person, not work with, but just talk with the other person and see how that resonates for them. Does that make sense?
Yes, and can I add something to that? When we're talking about network, may I?
Of course,
it's a question. Okay, so here's what I would like to say. First of all, if we take collect, let's say again, go back to collective society where person's belonging to a certain group means more than a person's character. Actually, there are no networking events of the kind that are accepted in the United States. They are appearing in some form of superficial, at some superficial level, but they will never go deep because the culture is built on other principles. And so let me tell you, for example, you would come to Dubai, or you would come to Arab Emirates, or you would come to Turkey, or you would come to Greece, or you would come to Romania, or you would come to Bulgaria, or you would come to Brazil. There, these events, first of all, networking events are only appearing as a format, and it's a borrowed format from America. And I repeat again, it will never be fully, how could I say, it will always take the colors of that culture. So there will be a much more structured way of how you relate to people. First of all, you would not even need to pluck up your courage and come up to people. People will come up to you. Conversations effortlessly develop. How can I say it? There will be a structure where you will be introduced officially to everybody, and everybody will be introduced to you. And it's a protocol that collective societies have where people are never alone and never need to mix because they're already mixed in if they are allowed to come to a particular event. And there is a very well-established hierarchy as to how you're going to be accepted. And because you're a guest, you automatically go to the top of the hierarchy, and you need to use it very, very, and I'm using the word use, but you will use it graciously. It will be very visible role. Because a guest is a god in collectivist societies, and they are treated very, 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 how would I say, honorably. Multiply, well, let's say we are very casual is how we treat guests here in the United States. Not so in collectivist cultures, and emerging markets are overwhelmingly collectivist cultures. That's not 100%. I need to analyze it. Am I making any sense? In other words, the whole structure of the event will be different.
Yes, and what it reminds me of is, you know, one of the benefits of being in either a fraternal organization or a women's group of some kind, or, you know, where you are among like people to not only network as business people, but also do service. You know, so, for example, when I was a Seroptimist for all those many years, you would be surprised that a guest could still feel so alone in a group that is supposed to be honoring. And then really, if you think about it, even the most selfish of Americans should realize that you don't let a guest sit in a corner and ignore them. And yet I know for a fact that it happens all the time. And I learned from somebody from New Zealand, I think it was, that the best thing to do when a guest comes is to go to that person and take them by the hand, literally, and introduce them to the president of the club. And we had to be taught that. This was a group of about 50 women that I was a member of this this group. And it just makes so much sense now, on top of what you just said, you know, to elevate the guest to a special place and then, you know, see what unfolds. It makes so much more sense than just letting everyone fend for themselves. Does that make sense? I mean, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yes, it makes a lot of sense. And let's also pay attention to one thing. In a sense, we are tied to the language here. English-speaking societies are individualist societies. And that is it. That's because the culture came with the language. And individualist societies are casual, and very often more casual in how they treat their guests. In collectivist societies that speak other languages, the structure of the language, the structure of the culture, the structure of the society, the structure of the event is such that the guest will never sit in the corner. It's out of the question. So what I'm saying is the fundamental thing that needs to be understood, one of the fundamental things that need to be understood, that in a sense we are limited by the language. That's why, I repeat, it's so valuable to study foreign languages even a little bit, because it very quickly introduces you to the fact that the universe has colors of which the other language did not know. And let me give you a little example. I'm just deviating for a second, going on a tangent. For example, there is the word for color in Russian. There are colors in Russian that are not recognized by the English language. So you see, and emotional, very emotional states that exist in one language don't exist in another language. There are words associated with gifts that are so typical of collectivist societies that don't even exist in American English or even British English, for that matter. So that's what I'm trying to say. But if somebody does not speak another language, no matter. If they, it doesn't matter to a point, because if you are observant, if you have been warned about these differences, your observation skills will carry you through. You will see how the protocol is executed, and you will be able to adjust yourself to the protocol. Now, if we're talking about social media groups, then it's another story, because the protocol is harder to recognize. But if the media group is from another country but goes in English, it's still possible to observe how the group interacts. And maybe we should even talk specifically, either this time or the some other time, how do you network on social media? How do you globalize yourself through the social media? Because that's another vehicle that appeared relatively recently.
Is there a script to follow? Can you organize your thoughts around a script or a, you know, you said at the beginning there really isn't a protocol, or should you change the protocol? No, you said, just hit the ground running. So I'm not sure I'm not sure what to do.
No, what I'm saying is it's not that you should not learn the protocol, but very often you do not have the time to learn. So I give you the shortcut. I give you an idea. Actually, I give you the idea that if you are in emerging markets, English-speaking societies, I repeat, are individualist societies. The rest of the societies, Scandinavian societies, Anglo-Saxon societies, Scandinavian societies are also individual societies. The rest of the societies are collectivist societies. So the majority of the societies on this planet are collectivists. They have a fundamentally different way of how to network. So what I'm saying is a person usually does not have the time to learn the protocol properly. Therefore, I give a shortcut of understanding that if you are in a collectivist society, your position of a guest will open the doors for you, and your role and your job is to observe everything keenly and see how things are done, because they're going to be done differently, but you will never be left alone. Am I making sense?
Absolutely. And it also seems like if you could be, and I'm going to use the word sponsored, or, you know, if you have someone that you were there with who could do the introduction, it's probably much more powerful and desirable.
Can I say something to that?
Yes.
This is a very, very correct statement, and I would like to strengthen that statement even further and say you will never be able to get to any networking events of such kinds, whatever they are, because they don't call them networking events, if you are not accompanied by someone. It's actually a must. You will never be introducing yourself. In the collectivist societies, you never introduce yourself. Somebody will do it for you. In fact, if you repeat the word I too many times, that actually works against you. You should never be introducing yourself, and you will not do that, because somebody will do it for you. There is a formula how they do it.
Wow. That is kind of eye-opening in a big way. That, you know, that here in the United States, we're learning, you know, many of us are trying to figure out the best way to network, and you know, forget social networking, because that is for another call, and I would love to have that be our next topic. But in terms of in-person networking, and you know, whether you learn your 30-second commercial, and how do you deliver it, and does anybody really care? And I mean, there's all this this drama and trauma about how to do it the right way so that you quote unquote get what you want. And it's definitely not the same thing as what you're talking about abroad. It's just not.
No, not at all. But you see, again, societies are different. But even if you take Scandinavian societies that are highly individualist by nature and allow a large degree of personal freedom, nevertheless, they are still much more structured than American society. American society gives you opportunities. It gives you fluidity. It gives you freedom to choose your image, because you will not be able to choose your image in Sweden. That is not how you do it. And we are not even talking about Southern Europe. Or we are not talking about Africa. That's not where you choose your image. No, 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 no. The image comes with you. Somebody does it for you, but somebody... Yeah. In other words, you cannot proclaim yourself an expert in a certain field in those societies. That's out of the question. Either you are stamped as an expert and you come as one, or you don't come at all. They won't allow you.
Wow.
And so there is a very, very intricate process as to how you build your reputation as an expert in those emerging markets. And there is a way to do that.
Wow. I realize that I am behind the curve completely on what we've been talking about today.
And oh, no, you're thoroughly American. I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, well, I thought that you would say, I understood that I am very American. Yes, you are very American, and it is wonderful. But at the same time, that's not the whole world.
Right. Now, even reputation management... reputation management would be different, I'm sure.
Entirely.
Oh my
Entirely.
Gosh, yes. And again, that goes back to that whole social media thing. A lot of what you do in social media is reputation management, because, you know, as we say, when we talk about social media here anyway, people are talking about you. A conversation is happening about you, and you'd better be in that conversation or you won't know what's being said. And, you know, if you've got a brand that's worth its reputation management function, then you definitely need to know what's being said, and that's why you have to stay involved in social media in the first place here. Now, I don't know about other countries. I don't know what they use it for other than uprisings.
Well, can I throw an example on the table that I think will give our listeners an idea of how it can be done?
Yes.
Remember that show that you watch of the 60s? Tell me, are there country clubs there at all? Like country club, which membership you need to earn, and you need to have two recommendations to become a member of that club?
Yes.
Are there? Okay. Well, that's a classic example of a hierarchical approach to life. Nobody needs to have an elevator speech there. It's those who recommended you. They have created the reputation for you by recommending you and therefore putting their reputation on the line. So by virtue of belonging to that club, you have a particular reputation. Now, that is different from free flow of networking. You see? Do you see how different they are, these two processes?
Uh-huh, I do. And what I'm thinking it might be better. This is one of those examples of something that is happening in networking in a collectivist fashion, let's say, that makes a lot of sense in terms of ways that if I were to adopt some of that and start a networking organization that includes that as its framework, it sounds like it might be very powerful.
We need to explore it. But what I'm saying is I was trying to show the principle of how it's being done. For example, even if you take Great Britain, It's an individualist society, but it's a class society. It's a hierarchical society still. That means that if you went to a particular private school, which they call public schools, forever and ever and ever, by the color of your tie, you will be able to network with that person, no matter which part of the world that person is. It is an institutional loyalty. And this is a classic way of how reputations are built and promoted. For example, if you come to Dubai today, I would say you of course, you can land and, you know, you can rent. I mean, you can have a reservation for a hotel and such like things. But if you really want to penetrate, you have to rely on you have to build your reputation. But then again, you can't do it. But it is a very particular process and very different from American process. But the hierarchical part of American society gives you an idea of how it can be done. For example, I remember very well one of very famous conductors in the world. His name is Valery Gergiev. He's very famous guy. And he's one of the leading conductors in Metropolitan Opera. He's the leading conductor of Mariinsky Theater, which is a famous theater in Russia, and he is very famous in New York, in the Metropolitan Opera. Because I went to school with him, it immediately gave me a passport into a particular society, and that was a very class-oriented society in my view. This is old money. They all support ballet and classic music in the United States. They give each other recommendations. They sit on different boards and of different foundations. And let me tell you, it was like, class European society. And you could recognize it. You could recognize that it's a closed society of sorts. And it was very interesting for me to watch it. No networking taking place there, let me tell you. None. Personal recommendations.
Right. I just wrote down the words passports to success. And I think that there are, among people of goodwill, people who care about other people, and people who are paying attention, there are some passports that can be, you know, handed out, so to speak, or earned. And they are the passports to success. And I think that's what Go Global Fast is kind of explaining, exactly where your passports to success can be earned. And some of it is in observation, some of it is in analysis, some of it is in asking the right questions and learning the things that you have to learn, understanding when protocol is necessary, when it is not, or it always is, really. But see what I'm saying? It's kind of like that. That sounds like a cool thing to me, to have a passport to success and know that somebody has the secrets. You have the secrets.
I would like to say amen to a passport to success. I actually would even call it a global passport to success, because there is a unified, people are looking for a unified theory of the universe. There is also a unified theory of how you live and work in the world, no matter how changeable the scenery is. There is a way. There is a key. And I was obsessed with this question since childhood, actually. When I was growing up, I was always reading books about Americans, and I was thinking, are they human? Are they aliens from another universe? How are they? And when I came, I would be touching the grass in America, and I'm thinking, oh, the grass is exactly the same color the Russian grass has. And then I would be listening to cats meowing, and I would be thinking, these cats have no accent at all, and these are American cats. And then meowing exactly the same way as a Russian cat does it. And then the dogs would bark. And I would be thinking, dogs don't have accents either. Isn't it amazing? They speak pure dog language. And so when the dogs will come up to me, I will speak Russian to them because English would be such a terrible foreign language to speak with a dog. You can never speak English to a dog. And I never learned to speak English to dogs, cats, or children because I think proper children should be speaking Russian because, you know, Russian is the language, you see? So what I'm saying is there is, and so it put me face to face with a question. What is universal in our nature, which will allow us to succeed globally and be happy globally? And what is culturally conditioned in our nature that puts up walls between us or gives us a cultural advantage, a cultural edge, so to say, and how to use that cultural knife well? And it was very, very interesting. Let me point out one difference between Russian dogs and American dogs. American dogs, for example, American dogs are also, in spite of the fact that they don't have any accent in dog language, they are actually culturally conditioned. And let me tell you how. An American dog is not afraid for his life or for her life. Is not. An American dog assumes the society will be fair enough to give him a passport to live. A Russian dog never thinks anything like that. A Russian dog looks at you. I'm telling you, I was experimenting. There are a lot of homeless dogs in Russian cities, and I would look into their eyes, and I would be trying to understand those dogs and understand how they think. And I saw myself, well, maybe I'm kind of waxing poetic here, but please forgive me. I remember very well I spent hours looking at dogs because to me, they were me. They were no that different from me. I could see that they were looking at me and they were thinking, do I have the right to be happy? And I would be saying to that dog, yes, yes. By the way, I would switch into English. Yes, yes, doggy, you have the right to be happy. You have the right to be happy. Don't buy into this model of life. Yes, yes, fight for yourself. Now, once I actually was trying to ride a bicycle in the United States and actually fell on the dog. And I thought that dog will tear me apart. No way. That was an American dog. That American dog was just lying under me very peacefully waiting until I will get up and go away. I was thinking the Russian dog would already kill me because the Russian dog would be so frightened that it will assume that life is different. So what I'm saying is you can see my process of thinking. I'm just sharing with you. I was thinking, what is universal in us? What is culturally specific? What models of life are correct? What models of life are not correct? Do we have blind spots? And I came to a very firm conclusion. We all cultures have their blind spots, and globalization is destined to remove them. And we can train people by giving them, supplying them with these global success passports.
Wow. Okay.
How
so
is that?
I am this particular conversation today has put me on. Almost like I feel I'm off balance. You know, I feel like there's just so much more to learn. And I thought that I was going to be able to keep up with the whole thing. And it's like, okay, I got all this handled. But really, it is very, very complicated in one way, and yet a blessing in another way to realize that there is the commonality among everyone. You know, we're afraid of certain types of things, maybe. We love things. You know, we love people. The right, you know, I think the way you love people and the way I love people, in other words, the way you love your daughter and the way I love my daughter has to be the same. I mean, love is love, right? So I think it's very interesting that we are exploring this. But for some reason, for me today, this conversation, I just realized that there's just so much I don't know. I guess that's okay. I just don't know.
But can I say something to that?
Yeah.
Actually, the first step, and again, I'm talking to you, actually not even to you. I'm talking to our listeners, and I'm so much hoping that someone will listen to us. The first step for us Americans is to understand that there are things we do not know, and it is absolutely okay. And you know what it does to us? It makes us approachable. The rest of the world considers us so cool, so accomplished, so self-sufficient that it alienates us from the world. And that has been happening to us for a long time now. It's time for us to put the mask down and be very sincere. You should see what happens when Americanness is combined with sincerity and humility. You know, it creates miracles. I remember very well I would be taking American congressmen to Russia, and just looking at the person, I usually knew who was going to be very successful. And, in fact, I was prompting them parts of those global success passports technology. I was telling them, just show that you are fearful. And they say, how? Why? I said, well, because it will make you more successful, not less, more. So not knowing is actually wonderful for an American, because Americans very rarely allow themselves not to know something. They rarely allow themselves to show or to acknowledge that they don't know something. They consider it a sign of weakness. In the world, it is a sign of strength.
Well, I think I know that on some level, because I have said for many, many years, probably decades now, that there is unbelievable power in yielding, in not standing firm like an oak tree, you know, with deep, deep roots that can be uprooted by flowing water, but to be more like a willow and kind of just go with a little more yielding opportunity or yielding effect. In that same raging water, and the willow will stand. The oak tree can be swept away. You see what I'm saying? So I know that was waxing poetic also, but my point is I tend to think at times, okay, it's time to be a willow here, because standing like an oak is just going to get me knocked down. And I think that's what's happened for me today in this conversation, is I realized I am a willow right now. I do not know what I know I don't know everything in this regard. And yes, that is a good place to be. There is much more power in yielding to someone who either knows more or to the opportunity to learn more, rather than stay stuck and firm in something that does not serve. That's how I feel about it.
I cannot agree more with you. And by the way, this concept of a willow is a very deeply ingrained concept in a Buddhist philosophy. And it goes against, it flies in the face of certain expressions of American culture. We like to be strong, self-reliant, and independent. These things are wonderful, but again, every quality taken farther than it needs to be taken gives the opposite result. And it does. And these qualities, taken farther than they should, actually work against Americans. And that's why Americans have been in such trouble all over the world internationally. And usually, and I'm going to state it categorically, usually have a tendency not to succeed. Everybody else is better positioned in the globalized world. Americans are not doing that well in certain areas. In certain areas, they do, because they are still, as a culture, it's a very, very, persistent culture. It's a hardworking culture. It has a lot going for it. And also, let's look into the following. There are two symbols of American culture, of American philosophy of life. One is eagle, and another is dove. And the eagle holds everything in its talons, so that to keep the nation together. But the concept of keeping the nation together is already going into history. Now we have another challenge, and that challenge is better served by a symbol of a dove, and that's yielding, being strong, not towering over, but being strong and having humility is a sign of strength. You see? And that will carry an American through any protocol. I absolutely guarantee it. In fact, you know, in my political career, I had to network extensively. In other words, I had to build connections from the ground up, where in the places where you usually don't build any connections, that's among very highly positioned Russian and American military, and also general four, two, three, two-star generals were the bottom where I started, and up to four-star generals, and also with presidential administrations. And you could see that humility did wonders for the people who wanted to work internationally and globally. And in international relations, creates miracles. So one time, if the listeners, and please, listeners, write to us and tell us what you're interested in. If you are interested in how you start building your reputation globally, we can prompt you the processes as to how it can be done, and we will be very happy to do so.
Right, absolutely. All right, well, I think we can end this here today on this note that I picked up on so well, I think, today and happily, is that there is a passport to success on a global scale, so that global passport to success is available, that it is an interesting thing to note that strength and humility can live in the same space and how powerful that can be. So let's talk about that next time, that passport to success. Let's kind of follow up on that next time. And also the idea of blending all of what we were talking about today into the social media realm. Does that make sense?
Yes. Sure.
As a framework for next time?
Yes.
I would say.
Like a plan.
All right. So I will say good night or good night. I said good afternoon, and we haven't been on the phone long enough for it to be good night. But let's say goodbye for now. And we will definitely be back on next week with a conversation about strength and humility and the passport to success.
Sure. Have a good day, guys.
All right, now, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Go Global Fast with Dr. Tayera Kobayeva and Deborah Brown. Tune in every Monday for another hour of globalization success strategies. Go Global Fast is a production of the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.